All right, joining me this time are two old friends of mine from podcast years gone by. It's our first time talking to each other in, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years. Richard, Jack, how are you guys doing?
Hey, doing well, doing well.
Great.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a minute. I think the last time we actually talked, Richard, was we were talking Serie A. So this is a nice change to get back to Bundesliga here tonight.
During COVID too, right? So yeah, it's been a while.
It was during COVID. Yeah, it was. I think it was the 2021 season. It was right after the COVID interruption season. Mm-hmm, as well, so. Mm-hmm. We're talking second Bundesliga now, and a club that, by all accounts, would be considered German royalty. I mean, they're right there in terms of total championships won. I think Nuremberg and Schalke are level, right behind Bayern. I think they both have either 8 or 9, and none of those which came during the Bundesliga era. But still, you have to count what you count. And Schalke finished second place in the Bundesliga a number of times. Most recently, the 2017-18 season, and that's exactly where I want to begin, because this is kind of a cautionary tale of what can happen, and I'm going to get you two gentlemen to explain to me what exactly has happened, because all throughout my existence of watching football, Schalke has been a force to be reckoned with in the first Bundesliga. Seeing them relegated just a few years ago, was even more shocking than Hamburg going down before them, the season before them. So, having never been relegated before in their history. So Schalke 2017-18, Domenico Tedesco comes in. They finish second place, obviously distant second place to Bayern, but still second place nonetheless. They qualify for the Champions League. They win the Revere Derby against Dortmund, which is a huge, huge matchup. And the next season, they get to the Champions League knockout stage, losing only to Manchester City, which there's no shame in that, in the knockout stage. Guys, what happened after that Tedesco season in the immediate season following that? Because there was no follow-up to the domestic success, even though they did pretty well in Europe.
Well, I think...
Well, there's no shame in losing to Manchester City, but we lost pretty poorly to Manchester City. So the way we lost to Manchester City wasn't particularly pretty. But yeah, sorry, Richard, go ahead.
No, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say that too. I was like, well, you know, for us, I think that's when we call it Tedesco time. Not only shout out to Ethan, our friend with Schalke, but that season was a nice season. I think Schalke has really been in a downhill decline ever since Raul and Huntelaar left, right, the first time. And so I think that season we had high hopes with his young manager, Domenico Tedesco, obviously someone who was in the same class as Julian Nagelsmann. People thought of him as a genius in the making. And so to see what he did with Schalke, got him to second place. Wasn't the best football at all times. I mean, Jack and I talked about on the podcast numerous times that no, it wasn't always the best. He got the results, but didn't seem sustainable for long term. But I think the problems that happened with Schalke were in the making for a while. It's with mismanagement, not only with Tony's, but everything in the background just seemed we weren't doing things the Schalke way, and it seemed like we were spending money on players that. Players that really didn't have any kind of upside. We weren't really investing in the Knappenschmiede as much as we had in the past. These things, even despite that second place, it seemed like a very a band-aid on what a bigger problem was to come. Jack, what are your thoughts on the rest of that season?
I mean, I think something that you and I talked about, Richard, during the 2017 season a lot was we got kind of fortunate with where we got a lot of our goals that year. There's a lot of goals from set pieces, from dead ball situations, whether penalties or corner kicks or free kick situations, you know, Daniel Caligiuri playing a lot of balls. And so I think that sort of papered over what actually wasn't that strong of a team in certain areas, particularly in the attack. And so that second place may have been a little bit of a false dawn. We didn't reinforce our squad on the back end of that. And then I think we kind of got found out in the second year under Tedesco. I think you're also in 2017 kind of witnessing the last ride of kind of a true like Schalke Knappenschmiede presence in Leon Goretzka and Max Meyer's final seasons before they both departed the club on free transfers, by the way. Another theme of Schalke and contributor to their demise, especially, you know, with our financial situation being what it is, not capitalizing on some of those youth players over time. But I mean, I don't think we've seen youth products of that quality since. I mean, you can make an argument that Osanoe Draogo, currently the second division, is trending in that direction, but it's been a little bit in the wilderness with some of the guys that we've seen come through haven't quite reached that level. The squad deteriorated, didn't have the finances to replace people. And then, I mean, the whole thing just climbed on top of itself. COVID ultimately, I think, sunk us as well. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty miserable and obviously shocking to see us go down the way we did.
So the following season, 2018-19, you guys, you did say you lost in spectacular fashion to City, but it's the knockout stage nonetheless. You guys made it to the group stage in the Champions League. Not every German club can say that. It's been plenty of times where Leverkusen had a good squad, finished third, dropped down to Europa. Wolfsburg the same, but Schalke made it through, even though they finished 14th in the league. So right then and there, that's kind of an exclamation point for me. You go from second to 14th, and there's a 20-point plus point differential. And you guys in that season, 2018-19, were only 5 points off of the relegation zone. So, I mean, was that were you guys already alarmed by that point, like saying that something's not right here? Or did you look at that as just you were pulling double duty in Europe and the Bundesliga and you guys were just overmatched?
I mean, it's a little bit of both, but I think certainly, like Jack said, we kind of saw glimpses of this in that year that we finished in second place. And even the seasons prior, we had been struggling to even get in the top four. And so that last season under Tedesco, what we saw is all the teams started finding this out, figured out how to play against us. The team started losing faith in Tedesco. We had several horrible results culminating in that Man City debacle, but we had lost to Nuremberg 4-0. We lost to Cottbus, I think, or somebody, some other smaller teams by big margins. And we're like, well, what is going on here? And at that point, you know, the management decided they had to get rid of Tedesco and make a change. But by that point, it was already too late. And I think, you know, to Jack's point, like the reinvestment, we spent money on, you know, guys like Brielle Embolo and wasted a lot of money on these guys that you, I mean, 15 to 30 million euros on players that for what you're like overspending just because they're spending that kind of money in England doesn't mean you're going to got to spend it in Germany. And I think the scouting has not been as good as it had been previously. Those years where we sustained top four finishes from, shoot, man, mid-90s until, you know, the 2014 season or so like that. That's because there's good scouting, good teams that kept replenishing the talent. And we're perennial, you know, top two finishers, top three finishers because we had a really great team behind. But it just seems like we rested on our laurels for the longest time in recent years. And it kind of just that year, everything came to fruition and teams found us out. And, you know, we were lucky to get 14th at that point. But it was just a sign of things to come.
There's obviously a tremendous amount of prestige to Schalke. They have the second largest membership group or base in Germany, second only to Bayern. I believe that is correct. And obviously a historic, wonderful, beautiful stadium up there in Gelsenkirchen. And as you said, you know, all those consecutive top four finishes between this year and that year, also 8 German championships. What is there? Being that they're have been listed in the Forbes list for top 25 most valuable clubs as recently as 2016-17, I believe. Is there a money issue at Schalke? Is it financial, or is it just not hitting on prospects when you bring them in? Or is there, you say, Jack, you said COVID had a lot to do with it as well. So have they had trouble coming back from the COVID season?
Yeah, I mean, I think COVID kind of punched us while we were down to some extent. I mean, I think towards the back end of the previous decade, you were starting to see, you know, a long period of sort of financial mismanagement catch up with the club. And yeah, the people that we were spending large amounts of money on were not players that we were, you know, investing in to be able to flip for a profit, anything along those lines. I mean, look at some of the signings we had towards the end, like Sebastian Rudy. I think that was like 16 million from Bayern at the time or something along those lines. I mean, absolute, you know, bust in terms of a contributor, you know, the way you sign him, you can, you know, make money on, or like I said, a player you can invest in. But yeah, I mean, and it's only, you know, COVID hits, there's no fans in the stadium providing like that source of revenue. And yeah, it was extremely precarious for Schalke for a bit. There was, you know, a moment where we had to have the local state government co-sign, I think, like a $40 million loan in order for us to essentially stay solvent, you know, get a license and be, you know, financially solvent enough to continue to compete. And so when you're in a position where you're having to like have the local taxpayers on hook, essentially, to continue the survival of your club, I mean, I think that speaks to how close we were actually coming to financial disaster. We're making progress towards steadying that ship. But I think that also sort of relies upon a return to the Bundesliga sooner rather than later, or at least certainly not getting relegated and falling even further. I think if we were to get relegated further down to Division III, that would certainly be pretty disastrous for the financial stability going forward. So, yeah, it's not just a matter of a performance dip and everything else is fine. There's a lot of factors out, you know, going on, you know, in terms of what's happening off the field as well that have been making it, you know, a tumultuous period for the club.
Richard, when I think of the last 10 years of Schalke football, one guy comes to mind, and he's on this poster that's on my wall up here, 2014 World Champions, and it's Benedikt Jovetic. And I say that because, to me, he always came across on the national team as one of the guys that was a leader in the dressing room, but also he was the Schalke captain. And is there also maybe a point where one could say maybe there's been a lack of leadership within the dressing room in terms of that central figure? Has that been missing, or has there been someone that stepped into? I've never really thought of anyone that came in and filled his shoes per se.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there was a great leadership in the team that won the Pokal, what, in 2011, 2012. You know, you had Neuer, you had Hovidis, you had Fährmann, you had, I mean, Raul, Huntelaar, so many guys in that locker room. And then, you know, as years went on, it was pretty much just Hovidis and Ralf Fährmann, honestly. And, you know, a couple of guys would come and go. Like, Kolasinac came in for a brief spell. Huntelaar came in for a brief spell. Hovidis and Fährmann were the main guys. But I think it's not only that the leadership was there, but even that was their... Not, I want to say their commitment, but I want to say, like, everyone just started feeling like the pressure that the reinvestment, everything that's going on in the back scenes wasn't working out to their favor, and the results on the pitch weren't, you know, coming out favorably. And so the team just struggled together. It didn't matter if they had the leadership there. I mean, Naldo was there for the 2016, 2017, 2018 seasons, and, you know, he's great to have in the locker room. He was another big one there, but it just seemed like the butt heads with Tedesco that second season really kind of took things to really sour. Tedesco put a split between him and Naldo, him and Hovidis. And it just seemed like the faith in that locker room started to wane, even though the leadership was there. It just wasn't enough. And I mean, and we've had a consistent presence of Buskins, Asamoah on the bench there for years, it seems like. And that's still nothing. It wasn't good enough to keep Schalke buoyed in all the troubles, both on the pitch and off the pitch. So eventually overtook everything, and it was too much to bear for everyone.
Okay. So Jack, here we go. We're going to skip forward. We're in 2020, 2021. The bottom falls out finally. 18th place, 15 points off of 17 points off of relegation, 19 points off of safety, 3 wins, 7 draws, 24 losses. So what happened that season? How did it go from, you know, 12th place the year before, even that COVID rebound season, they come back, or 2019, 2020, the COVID season. And then to the next year, it just completely falls out. What happened in that season to make it go so badly for Schalke?
I mean, the years all bleed together after a while. So, I mean, there's been such a sustained period of poor play from Schalke that, you know, over the years, I forget some of the specifics. But, like, honestly, I mean, like, you look at teams like, you know, Bayern, some of the teams at the top of the league, they're getting players from some of the other better teams in the league on the top level. Towards the end of Schalke's time in the Bundesliga, we were getting players on loan from the second division. Like, we're relying on second division talent and hoping that it can translate to the top division. So in terms of what we can afford in our recruitment, once again, the squad was pretty poor. We started relying kind of heavily on the youth system, but once again, not being able to generate players kind of the quality I think that we're sort of used to seeing. And a lot of these guys, regardless of how Richard and I have sort of felt about some of them, whether, you know, positively or negatively, they haven't really stuck around. You know, I mean, the likes of, like, you know, Florian Flick, Chan Bazdewan, or Katushu, or any of these guys, you know, a lot of these people that we've seen come through, most of them haven't worked out. Yeah, I think it was probably like a little bit too early for the arrival of like a Malik Chow or something along those lines. But the whole situation at the club, I think, just spiraled, and it was way too oppressive, I think, for the team to even overcome, even if we had better talent. I think we had a squad that was probably deserving of being relegated at the time, but the mood and the energy at the club was so negative, and the weight of that was so overwhelming that, like, I mean, I don't know how a team wouldn't have collapsed under that pressure constantly. I mean, the first goal goes in and the heads drop and you know that you're in for another, you know, shellacking at some point. There just came a point where we weren't really playing football. And it just wasn't good enough. And it was only going to go in one direction. And, you know, ultimately it did, unfortunately.
So, Richard, there's some good news in this. 2021-22 comes around. Schalke is now in a place where they are very, very unfamiliar with second Bundesliga, but they win it. They actually win the entire league to win direct promotion back to the Bundesliga. Tell me, do you have any memories about that season? I mean, you guys were the champions of the second league. Looked like things were heading in the right direction. Typically, when a club, especially an established one, you know, if you would think to yourself, now, if Darmstadt and Ingolstadt can get promoted in 2014-15, and they can both stay up at least 1 year, and they are minuscule based on population in terms of the cities they're in, finances. There was also the talk about Darmstadt having mold in their showers when they first came to the Bundesliga. Bayern refused to play there. I can understand why. I'm not kidding you. That was actually a true story. Schalke is a, you know, a perennial Champions League or Europa League participant. They are rich when it comes to German football. So one would expect a direct promotion back to the first Bundesliga, back to the prime time. They would. This was like their learning lesson. They got to the second tier. They made it right back up. They won the league. What were your thoughts coming out of that season? Like, did you have high hopes for what was to come for last season based on what you did in the second Bundesliga, the success you had?
Bundesliga title, right? No. No, it's funny because, like, at the beginning of that season, you know, heading into the Zweite Liga, Jack and I, we talked about how, like, look, every Schalke fan was saying, oh, we're going to get promoted right back up. This is how we go. And we're like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is the true Super League here. Zweite Liga is difficult. Look at Hamburg. You know, Kaiserslautern was in the third division at the time. St. Pauli had been there forever. Nuremberg had been there forever. So it's like, yeah. Pump your brakes. Yeah, we have the potential of coming back up, but it's not going to be easy. And then the second thing, we had no money. And so we had Roven Schroeder had to pull a miracle by pulling guys from free and for cheap to mix match his team together in hopes that they're going to be good enough to play. We have this manager, Gramotzis, to lead us the way. And it starts off, it didn't start off all roses and peaches, right? It was poor results. Yeah, we had Simo Toroda scoring goals by the boatload, but really he was like the only one scoring goals at the time. And Thomas Ojan was having a good season, but other than that, like it was pretty much a one-trick pony that Schalke was, and we weren't consistent at all. Started the season off with a loss to Hamburg, got a couple wins, but we got some bad losses to Regensburg and some other teams like that. And eventually, just before the Winterpause, I think it was, you know, enough was enough, and Schalke was sitting like 11th, 12th position. And not even then, I think it happened much later, but ultimately what it was is Schalke was not looking like we're going to get promoted, and all of a sudden Buskins took over because, you know, Gramotzis wasn't cutting it, and we went on this fantastic run at the end of the season, like 8 wins in a row, something crazy, and we won it on the last couple of weeks of the season. So that season was fantastic. It was felt great that we went up because we did see, you know, it was great to have Simo Toroda, guys like Marius Bulter and Rodrigo Salazar coming to the forefront, Thomas Owion. So we had high hopes for the next year, but there's also looking like, hey, Roven Schroeder pieced this thing together with freebies and all this other stuff. We don't know what our team's going to look like next year. We had an idea what a small core would be, maybe a handful of guys. But we knew a bunch of guys were going to be gone, and we had a lot of changes going to happen. And so all we were hoping is that, look, hey, Roven Schroeder is a genius, and so we're going to have to trust him that he's going to be able to figure it out again. We were happy. It's the first time Jack and I were talking about, it was the first time we were able to celebrate wins. Our Victory Monday, we call it, our podcast after a win. We had so many of those. We hadn't had that in many, many years, it seemed like, because it's just, wins are hard to come by. And that year was so fun just because we had a lot more wins. Games were more competitive. It was much more entertaining. Our watch-alongs were fun. So, yeah, it was a great season, and there were hopes, but we were both, Jack and I think, we're like, hey, let's be cautious on this because we got to replenish this team because we're losing a bunch of the players for, you know, for free transfers, loans, whatever it is. So, but yeah, we were optimistic, but definitely excited that we won the title.
Yeah. 20 wins, which led the second Bundesliga in wins that season. So you guys had, you know, you had a lot of victories to celebrate there, but, so even with that success, Jack, you were cautiously optimistic about going into last season's campaign, even having been the best team in the second tier.
It's tough because, I mean, I think what Richard was speaking to right at the end there was this wasn't even a managerial change that was made at the Winterpause halfway through the season. We pulled the plug on Gramatzis, I think, in March with like 8 or 9 games remaining when we were sixth in the table or something along those lines. And so, like, very much not looking like we were going to get promoted necessarily or, you know, or certainly not win the title. And then we just went on this pure vibes run, you know, with like a skeleton coaching crew and rattled off a bunch of wins and somehow got promoted and snatched the title in the midst of it. So it wasn't, you know, necessarily that, like, hey, you know, we got promoted in the course of being a dominating force all season long. Like, yeah, we were at the right end of the table, but it wasn't like the most confident you could have felt about a promotion team. And then the problem was we weren't able to retain some of that talent going into the next season. So, I mean, you look at – we had the emergence of Malik Chow at center back, you know, a young center back coming through our system who was a huge contributor to us that season. He went off and joined AC Milan. So stays in Richard's sphere of influence, fortunately for Richard, but leaves mine. But also, you know, the likes of Koi Takura, you know, Manchester City wouldn't really negotiate with us. That's another center back who was fantastic for us in that season. We lost him as well. And yes, you have, you know, Simon Torrado scoring 30 goals, setting a second division goal scoring record, but a guy who's never really been able to replicate that success at the top flight, a year older well. You know, so you're looking and saying, like, hey, there's reinforcements that we need. A guy like Darko Chorlinov, who came on strong late in that second division season, becoming a huge X factor for us, providing some additional offense, we lose him as well. So, yeah, I mean, going into the second division, handicapped once again in terms of what you can do from a financial standpoint. Going back into the Bundesliga with not a first-choice coaching candidate, I mean, the board was looking to get Thomas Reis going into that season, wasn't available, and so we had, you know, Frank Kramer come in. So, you know, less than optimal squad, less than optimal transfers, less than optimal coaching situation. It was always going to be an uphill battle for me. So, like, optimistic that maybe we could find a way to stay up. But if we're staying up, we're talking about, you know, 15th place, 14th place. We're not talking about, you know, a table finisher above. It's basically, can we survive and reestablish at least some sort of base of operations in the Bundesliga? And then go from there and build, which is going to be a very long-term project. But first, you have to get that stability and be able to maintain that level.
Well, to your point, it started off horrendously last year. One of the worst forerunners I can ever remember. But after the Christmas break, you guys strung together. It was almost like this tug of war. It's like Schalke were playing for like draws. It was like we just got to keep getting points and keep getting points. I specifically remember that. I'm like, they draw every single week. Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. I was like sitting there after Christmas. It was like 0-0, 0-0, 1-1, 0-0, 1-1. And surely but slowly, surely you guys were gaining traction. So it was like the clubs in front of you were getting 0 points, but Schalke was getting one. And if those clubs got 0 points over 3 weeks and you got 3 draws, that's 3 points more than you got. And you were climbing the ladder ever so slowly. And it just comes up short. I mean, just short. You guys finished with 31 points last season. That was good enough for 17th spot. You finished only 2 points back of the same team right now that's in third place. That was Stuttgart, who finished with 33 in the relegation spot. So what was that the strategy in the second half of the season, is just to basically get cookie crumbs and make a whole cookie out of it at some point? Or and why did it fall short? Why did it end up falling short at the end? You guys were one win away truly from safety.
I think a lot ultimately comes, if you look in hindsight, was that the management's failure to hire Rice at the early time, or maybe the signing of Frankie Kramer, right? And there was a lot of argument going on with the management and the backroom staff where Roven Schroeder ends up leaving in the middle of the night and says, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And we woke up the next morning like, what just happened? Our savior from last year is gone. All of a sudden just drops and leaves us. And Kramer's out and we're like, what's going on? And obviously at that time, they really wanted Rice to come in there, whether Schroeder wanted that or not, who knows. But you know, when Rice came in, they knew that, hey, we're looking at relegation dead in the face again. We need to figure out some way to save it off. By hook or by crook, you got to find a way. And I think the problem was they pulled the hook waited too long for Frankie Kramer. Probably shouldn't have hired him in the first place, right? Considering all the moves that came out. And so, you know, what we saw is, yeah, like you said, clawing and getting draws. If you look at it, Schalke had the 8th best defense in the second half of the season.
Right. Yeah.
What would have happened if we had Rice for a little bit longer, right? Even a month earlier when it came in, who knows what would have happened. Maybe nothing. Maybe we never got it. Who knows? But the way we were playing, we were fighting every game. It's what we were not doing under Frankie Kramer. And what we saw is the passion come back, the emotion come back. The fans were, as always, you know, leading the team along the way. But finally on the pitch, you started seeing some resemblance of the minor spirit that, you know, that has driven Schalke through all these years. And so, yeah, unfortunately, it was too little too late. But, too much tension in the background with the manager, the sporting director, the board. Everything on the board has been a constant, how do I put this? It just seems like there's always tension with the board and the rest of the management team. So it's been awkward, to say the least.
Here's a question for you. So the number I'm going to spit out at you is 35. That's the amount of goals scored last season. That's one goal per game average. That's the lowest total in the Bundesliga last season. If you take out the second Bundesliga season with Torreira scoring goops and goops of goals, going even back to Tedesco, it was a second place finish, and everyone said Schalke had the most boring squad in the entire league. What do you guys think is the problem with scoring goals for Schalke, especially as it pertains to the first tier? Obviously, it wasn't a problem in the second, but in the first, whether it was a second place Schalke team or a 17th place Schalke team, it seems like putting the goal in the back of the net has actually been a massive problem, especially over the last half decade.
I think there's a lot you can say about the managers we've had in and the inability to establish actually, you know, like an effective attack from sort of a philosophical standpoint. But I think honestly, it just boils down to a lack of quality, man, which mm-hmm. I know is basic. But I mean, you look at some of the players we had, you know, when Richard and I were becoming, or when I should speak for myself more, but like, you know, when I was becoming a Schalke supporter, you know, Kevin Karani, right, back in the day. Players like that, yeah. You know, we get Raul. We have Klaas-Jan Huntelaar as sort of a talismanic figure for a number of years, and there's really been no one that's been. And let me go from that to, you know, to Franco Di Santo. I mean, I'm just saying, we haven't been able to replace that presence. Yeah, of course, Torreira, you know, legendary second division figure, had that incredible season. But you know, who we're dealing with now. I mean, it's still Torreira. It's Sebastian Polter. It's just like, yeah, we haven't had those guys. Harit was maybe, you know, that a light in the darkness for a bit in terms of a midfield spark, somebody that could create some offense, but there hasn't been enough around them consistently and hasn't been cohesive enough. Yeah, it's been frustrating. I mean, and I think like Schalke fans don't even necessarily demand that. I feel like we're happy getting results other ways. I mean, I think we're okay with those kind of things, but every once in a while, man, it'd be nice. And that's part of why the second division was so fun the first time we were down there, is because it was like, hey, we don't want to be here. This is a bad situation. The club really needs to bounce back and find some success. But like at the same time, we had a fucking striker again, like, excuse my language, that, like, you know, we could bank some goals in, and we hadn't had that for a bit. So I don't know. It'd be nice if we could find some of that. And maybe some of that starts once again with getting some youth prospects coming through.
You forgot to mention the awesomeness that was Kevin Prince Boateng. You forgot his name. So anyways, so let's talk about this season then real quick. So obviously another inauspicious start for Schalke. They do get a win last weekend, and I saw at halftime, I think they were, did they win today in the cup?
No, we lost in extra time.
Okay, extra time. Okay, that's okay. So I was at halftime the last time I saw a score, but lost in extra time. So they're out of the relegation zone right now in the second, I believe. I think you guys are in 16th, or you're in the relegation. 16. Yeah, you're in the relegation spot. Sorry, you would not go directly down. So I think you play Ulm right now, which my entire adult life, Ulm has been like an amateur club, which is just weird to see them in the third. Where does it go from here? Where do you guys obviously, Jack, you saying that Schalke in the third tier is just unimaginable for me. Like this right now seems very hard to believe, but that would be unimaginable. Three-time Bundesliga champions, Kaiserslautern, have made that journey themselves to the third tier. It's not something that's out of the realm of possibility, because I've seen Kaiserslautern in the last quarter century playing in Europe, and I've seen them playing in the third tier of German football. And that's a really dark place to be. Ask 1860 Munich. They've been down there for a while. So what do you think? I know you guys just made another managerial change a couple of weeks ago. What is the path going forward for the Royal Blues of German football?
It's really one of two things. Either A, we stabilize and find a way to either get promotion or be back in the hunt to be relevant, or if we drop to the Dritte Liga, you could look at the absolvency of the club, because I don't know financially if we can handle that kind of, you know, that kind of disaster. It'll be detrimental to German football, but also, more in particular, Schalke. And, you know, Kaiserslautern, even though they went down there, they went through something similar. I think they go through bankruptcy and had to get a new owner or something like that effect, because they had to restabilize. You have to. It's a big, huge financial hit, especially if you have a huge stadium, as Kaiserslautern did, as Schalke do. So I think, you know, if we were to go down, I think that would be detrimental. But I think we made the move. It just, whatever reason, you know, as good as Rice was for us last season, it just, this year, it wasn't clicking. You thought going to a division like the Zweite Liga, which is slightly easier in the sense that you don't have the Bayerns and the Dortmunds of the world. It's still a difficult league, and it seemed like the players, it just wasn't clicking for whatever reason. We were in the relegation zone, and so something had to be done. It just, you couldn't wait till the Winterpause, and so they made the move, and in an atypical Schalke fashion, they went for someone who we haven't seen over the last 10 years, where typically went for the safe German bet. And if it was someone that took a chance with, it was a German coach or someone who had German nationality. Karel Gerards is not that. He's Belgian. Doesn't even speak the language, but what he does is bring winning mentality at USG, FC Union Saint-Gilles in Belgium. He got a team from the second division. You know, he was as assistant coach and then eventually coach, and they got to second place that first year in promotion. They stayed up there. They went to the semifinals of their league, the French tournament. That is a really good team, and they played attractive football. And the fact that Schalke went for the anti-Schalke signing is saying that, hey, we're trying anything. We're desperate at this point. And hopefully it clicks. The first friendly was fantastic. Got a 4-1 result. It's a friendly, but it's against Heracles, who's a decent Eredivisie side. First game against Karlsruhe, not optimal, losing 3-0. Looked just the same as we did under Rice. But the last game we had won 3-1, 3-2 against Hanover. And then we went against St. Pauli, who's the top of the league, who hasn't even had a loss this year. We had the lead at halftime, like you said. They got a late goal, and then went to extra time. They had a nice goal. Schalke clicked off for like 1 second. They get the game winner in overtime, and yeah, that's all she said. But at least there was fight in there.
Right.
The last couple weeks, we've seen more fight from Schalke than we had all season long. So hopefully it's a positive. But like I said, there's only two ways it can go. It's either we stabilize with new manager and have a chance for promotion, or we drop away into obscurity.
I mean, who knows what happens if we rattle off a few wins, but I think given how the season started, where we are on the table and what's realistic, like, I think our most optimistic kind of path forward is, you know, climb the table, have a good finish to the season, establish something with the new manager, and then kind of retool and try to, you know, be ready for next season to attack it from the beginning, hopefully with some continuity at the manager position, and a much stronger performing team. I think part of the problem with Schalke, like, you know, when you start falling into the second division is, you know, you start firing managers, and it's like, who can you even attract? Who can we afford, but who can you even attract? I mean, you're sitting, like, you know, in the relegation zone of the second division with not a particularly good squad. Why is a coach going to want to waltz into that position willingly? And I think what we've seen is that, you know, rightly or wrongly, the Schalke job still has a little bit more shine than you might expect given our circumstances because of the brand.
For sure.
So you have a guy, we got lucky. I mean, we have a guy like, you know, Kerhera, so who's, you know, based on what he's done in a limited, you know, window here, but based on what he's done, you would expect him to have a job somewhere. And he wasn't re-signed at USG and was available, and we somehow are able to bring him in. It's the guy that made a nice run in Europe, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I think, you know, how's it going to work out? We'll have to wait and see. But at least he's coming in and speaking very plainly and directly and not being afraid to address the problems. And, you know, not calling players out and, you know, throwing them under the bus, but like letting people know when there's an issue and when things aren't good enough. And trying to instill winning mentality back in the team, which is part of the biggest issue over the past few seasons, just the culture and the negativity and that cloud that's constantly hanging over Schalke and the squad that makes it so difficult to be positive and to be confident and play with any sense of belief. So, you know, early days, but yeah, hopefully, you know, sort of the spark that we're seeing initially can actually translate into a sustained performance and Schalke can get back on the right track.
So it's interesting, Richard, you mentioned the word insolvency, and that's a word that if you look at the last, I'd say 30 years of German football, and you take like a top five, like the top five clubs, it's obviously, you have to say Schalke, Bayern, Dortmund, probably maybe Stuttgart, Kaiserslautern, Leverkusen's in there somewhere. But besides Leverkusen and Schalke, they've all won championships, and Schalke has won championships historically. When Dortmund faced insolvency, it was, of all clubs, Bayern Munich that came to their aid, because you're talking about a former Champions League winner, 1997, one of the greatest squads in German football history, won the Champions League, did it all, and 5 years later, they were basically going to go financially under. And Bayern Munich, their arch rivals from the south, ended up saving them. So I would think that if it ever came to that for Schalke, there's too much history, too much prestige, that something or someone would not let that happen. And even 1860 Munich, who were facing similar situations about 4 years ago, they just took a hit and went down to the fourth tier and said, we'll come back up. Like, I can't imagine a world. I mean, outside, it was unimaginable for them to be in the third tier. It's a whole different solar system to not even be in existence. So don't you think that something would happen before that step is taken?
For sure. I think so. And I think also Schalke helped out Dortmund at that time too. People don't talk about that. They talk about Bayern, but Schalke, I think, do it as well. I do think, I mean, we obviously saw the state come in and help with the 40 million loan. But it's going to be dire things, but a lot of things have to change. I mean, people are already, we're in a time where everyone always said it's a 50 plus one and that's it. Now people are like, well, we need money, so we don't want Tony's, but we'll consider other things possibly depending on how it goes. So people are, you know, when you get down to that position, you're going to have to think differently. And you're going to hope you get money from, you know, your friends somewhere along the way, but things will have to change. You can't keep doing things the way you always have, because if you do, you're just going to be stuck in that place like 1860 is. And so hopefully it never gets to that point. I hope you don't have to ask your friends for help, but I think, you know, you would have friends that come out and say, hey, this is a historic club. We have to help them out. It's just better for the league if they're relevant. You know, if you keep them down in obscurity, it's not going to do anything. Once Kaiserslautern eventually gets back up to the Bundesliga, whenever that is, it's going to be a better place, right? Obviously, also the Hamburgs of the world too, and St. Pauli. So, yeah, I hopefully Schalke never gets to that point. But I think, yeah, you're right. There are friends that will hopefully help, but let's not ever get there to find out.
Well, Jack, one final question: do you think? And it really kind of goes to both of you, but I'll ask you first, Jack. What do you think the 50 plus one rule helps or hurts German football?
I mean, it depends on what you value, I guess.
Well, prices are low because 50 plus one, right? So it's always saying that you can take the family out to the ballpark for, you know, but I argue you can also do that at a Braves game, even though they're, you know, like world champions 2 years ago. If you sit in the nosebleeds, you can do it. I see families do it all the time. The other, in all seriousness, I know that that's part of it, right? The fan experience, but also you're kind of seeing where it seems like in the last 10 years, especially with 50 plus one, the only club that really gets past consistently the group of 16 in the Champions League is Bayern. You see Dortmund stop there. You see Schalke stop there. Leverkusen will get out, then they'll stop there. Wolfsburg is the exception to that when they had Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, how can you not, right? But even they were susceptible.
That was a fun team back then.
Yeah, it's a fun team, but they, you know, Real Madrid got them. I mean, you know, like that was, you know, they replaced him with a Schalke Knabenschmiede graduate himself in Julian Draxler, who went to Wolfsburg and then went on to other things. But my question in that would be, what I value is, I guess, German competitiveness, like in terms of having someone else other than Bayern win the league, and also having these clubs like, say an investor wanted to come in, you know, and say, I'm going to pump in, you know, 500 million into Schalke or whatever. I want to make Dortmund where they are now right there with Bayern, not just like last season, but every season. Or somebody says, Mercedes-Benz says, we're going to go all in on Stuttgart and just pump the money into them. I mean, so that's, I guess that's what I'm saying is like, I have this fear that German football is kind of being left behind on the international scene. Despite, I know the fact Frankfurt won the Europa League a couple of years ago, but I think that was an anomaly. When you look at it in the last 10 years, it's always Bayern, Bayern, Bayern in the Champions League. And these like the Wolfsburgs of the world, the Leipzigs of the world, they're good enough to get to the round of 16, but that's where they top out. You guys included against Man City. What was that? 7-2 was one of those matches. 7-2, I think, was the final. Yeah. And that's not being competitive at that point. That's just, I mean, that's just Pep Guardiola like playing with you. So my question is, do you think it hurts German football from a competitive standpoint?
Yeah. And so, yeah, with that clarification, that's what I mean in terms of what do you value? So if what we're valuing is, you know, we love German football, we care about the brand, and we want to root for those clubs and support them on a European stage, then yeah, I think it's hurting it. And that's not to say there aren't going to be off years where Dortmund has a particularly strong squad and is going to be able to make a run, or some of the other teams can make some noise here and there. But I do think, generally speaking, you're correct. It's Bayern. That's because Bayern's the only team in the Bundesliga ultimately that isn't a selling club. Dortmund's a selling club, even with all their success and everything. They still have been. I mean, like they don't retain these guys. You know, where's Jadon Sancho? Where's Jude Bellingham? Right? Where's Erling Haaland? Not at Dortmund. And if they were able to hold on to these guys, then maybe it'd be a different conversation. But currently they're not. And
Jadon Sancho is going to be at Dortmund again soon.
Yeah, perhaps. It hasn't worked out. But you know what I'm saying, in terms of like, you know, guy reaches his peak and he's going elsewhere. He's not staying.
Sure.
I think obviously 50 plus one plays a role in that. And if you, is it the only solution? Perhaps not. But I think, yeah, I think it would probably help on that standpoint. It's just a question of, do you value more the kind of the current state of the culture in German football? And are you concerned about, you know, what eliminating some of those bedrock rules would do for that culture and turn us into something where, hey, yeah, maybe we're more competitive, but have we lost what made us care about this division in the first place? And it's not an easy question to answer. And I think I respect both sides of that conversation. I don't think anyone's crazy for feeling one way or the other, especially as an outsider in the U.S. I have less of a stake in it, obviously. But I think the fact that we're even having this conversation speaks to the passion that people have for German football as it is currently, and sort of the unique space that it's carved out amongst sort of your Europe's top five leagues, if you want to phrase it in that way.
Richard, what do you think?
I agree with Jack, and I think, you know, there are already teams in the Bundesliga who have already kind of broken the 50 plus one, right? There's obviously Bayern. There's also Stuttgart with the Mercedes-Benz, as you mentioned, Leverkusen with the Bayer brand behind them, Hoffenheim, Leipzig, obviously, with Rasenball Sports, right? You know, it's Red Bull. So there are teams that are finding ways to do this, but they're sticking within the means, or they're sticking behind the tradition still to an extent. Unless you ask about Leipzig, the rest of the fans say no. Even the Bayern fans say no, right? But I think, to Jack's point, I think, you know, what do you value? And if it's, you know, you want to keep it to the tradition thing, great, keep doing it. And if you can find a way to get talented years and find ways to play well, great. But, you know, to compete in this world, money, you have to compete,
yeah,
right? Just to compete in the Bundesliga alone, you need to have some more money. Otherwise, you're just going to be everyone's going to be saying the sucks and stuck in the same positions. If occasionally you have the Freiburgs, the Union Berlins of the world that'll come up and do this fantastic thing, but then they go back down. Freiburg, to their credit, have held it for the last, you know, 5 years or so. But money eventually is what speaks with everything. And no, you don't want to have someone come in here and a foreign investor and putting all this money and changing the whole identity of the club, and you lose that connection with the club, and the prices go up as a result, right? Same thing I know here with the Penguins. You know, they won the Stanley Cup, back to back Stanley Cups in recent years, and prices went up to, you know, cheap seats were in the 100 plus, you know, which is ridiculous at this point. So I understand why the 50 plus one is so important, but again, it's unless you have a team that whose owner has some stability with money that is part of the 50 plus one. You know, for a while we did have Clemens Tönnies. He did have money. He did have money, right?
Oh, but Clemens Tönnies, you know, yeah. Got, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't get out of his own way, right? And eventually he had to go because I'm not going to go there, but he had to go.
Yeah.
But unless you have someone like that, you really got to find some other means. And I don't know, we'll see what happens with Schalke and the rest of the Bundesliga. But yeah, it's certainly a debate. It can go either way. And like Jack, I see both sides of it. And like you said, we're from the outside looking in, but there's certainly valid points to both sides of it for sure. So I understand when they say they fight wholeheartedly saying we want the 50 plus one. And I also see the point of getting an investor in there, getting a little bit of money, and then getting out of your own way. So
it's difficult. I guess on a closing note, I can kind of understand from if you're a Newcastle supporter that you really like the Saudis right now, right? Because you're in the Champions League. The season before that, you were almost relegated. In one season, you go from relegation almost to the Champions League. And I have daydreams as a Nuremberg supporter to be like, wow, wouldn't it be nice to actually compete with Bayern twice a year, go to the Allianz Arena, steal a point, take them to the Frankenstadion, win 3 points. Yeah, that's a nice, but that can't happen without some Qatari coming over and pumping in 500 mil into Nuremberg. That's just not going to happen. They're not going to get it with, no pun intended, but the guy's name is actually Nuremberger. They're not going to get it with players like that playing for them. And it also, as you and I, Richard, have talked about before, Nuremberg was a little bit of a feeding academy to Schalke when you guys were on top and we were in the second tier. So it's you know, there is a friendly relationship between the two clubs. Now they're enemies in the second tier. But I see it from the fan perspective, but then also I'm like, it would be, as a football romantic, you like want to see some of these other clubs like Kaiserslautern, like the Karlsruhe's, Nuremberg. You want to even Hamburg, you know, you want to see them. I guess it's the table of my childhood. Like that table, like 92, 93, I have nostalgia for that table. And you guys were included in that. But also with Saarbrücken. I mean, that's okay. Like that's just probably never going to happen, but I'm sure Saarbrücken supporters would love to have, you know, Etihad Airways come in and pump in some money into Saarbrücken, you know? So I see both sides like you do. I know that a lot of people are like, I don't want to pay $50 for a Braves ticket when it used to be 25, but that's what you get when you win the World Series. And, you know, that's unfortunately in English football, when, you know, City wins a treble, ticket prices are going to go up. That's just that's the name of the game. Germany has not fallen victim to it yet because of how things are. But Richard, as you point out, you know, Leipzig follows the 50 plus one rule. Like we all know they do, right? I mean, they have a 5-member board and they all are with Red Bull.
Red Bull.
Yeah. So, you know, but guys, this has been a lot of fun. I have thoroughly enjoyed it, catching back up with you two and talking about your club. And it's a club that I wish all the success in the world to. I want to see them back up. And, you know, I know it's a tough period right now, but I think that at the very least, I think that they'll stabilize and we'll have a solid second tier season. But I do hope for a quick rebound, and I hope to see them back up there playing with Bayern and Dortmund and Stuttgart and Leverkusen very, very shortly.
Fingers crossed.
We appreciate the emotional and moral support. We certainly need it at times.
Yeah, you got it, man. Anytime. All right, well, guys, have a great night, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right.